We're looking at a date. We hope we're going to be able to fulfill a certain date, but we're not doing anything until we know that this country is going to be healthy.
Trying to reopen the U.S. economy. It's Thursday, April 16th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us on Facebook and Instagram at VOA Asia. Also ahead, how much authority does President Trump have? South Koreans push aside pandemic to vote. It's harder for women to cover Afghan news. A food fight against coronavirus. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration commissioner says the models show the United States is close to the peak of the coronavirus outbreak, with federal social distancing guidelines due to expire at the end of April. But exactly when the economy will be back up again is still too early to tell. VOA's Elizabeth Lee has more.
When life will be back to normal is still uncertain in the U.S.
If you look at what we're doing, we're looking at a date. We hope we're going to be able to fulfill a certain date. But we're not doing anything until we know that this country is going to be healthy.
Even when the economy opens up again, White House officials expect to see new cases of coronavirus. The response will include a diagnostic test and a new antibody test to see if anybody who has already been exposed may have immunity. U.S. President Donald Trump says there is no need for mass testing across the country, but something more strategic as to who gets tested and focusing on hotspots. The Food and Drug Administration Commissioner Stephen Hahn says several factors should be considered,
including the underlying characteristics of the person, you know, whether they're more susceptible to a more serious outcome from COVID-19, where they live, what the prevalence of the disease is in the environment, and whether they've had a diagnostic test that's positive previously or not.
One factor is statistics showing the coronavirus is disproportionately affecting Black and Latino communities, which led the U.S. Surgeon General to deliver this message.
We need you to understand, especially in communities of color, we need you to step up and help stop the spread so that we can protect those who are most vulnerable.
An emerging hotspot is Baltimore, Maryland, near Washington, D.C., which is predominantly African American. An almost completed study found African Americans make up more than half of the coronavirus deaths in Maryland. But they are only 31% of the state's population.
Well, this disparity among African Americans is very disturbing. The vast majority of our resources are focused on that Baltimore-Washington corridor and these communities that you're talking about.
In the meantime, White House officials are struggling with a date for things to be back to normal again.
I'm going to have to make a decision, and I only hope to God that it's the right decision. But I would say without question, it's the biggest decision I've ever had to make.
As Mr. Trump weighs health data and safety with the toll the pandemic is taking on the economy. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News.
You can read more and see more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook at VOA Asia and Instagram, and you can stop by the voanews.com website. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you make a visit to voanews.com. With masks, hand sanitizer, and gloves, South Koreans vote during pandemic. U.S. ambassador says China not blocking medical supply exports. New Zealand's Ardern says ministers are to take a 20% pay cut for 6 months due to coronavirus impact. China did not warn public of likely pandemic for 6 key days. Australia's Cardinal Pell accuses opponents in first TV interview since release from prison. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and much more on Facebook at VOA Asia, as well as our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. With COVID-19 infections believed to be peaking in several parts of the United States, politicians, economists, and doctors are discussing whether it will be safe in the coming weeks for people to leave their homes and return to work or school. But before America decides when to reopen the economy, political leaders are debating who has the authority to make the decision. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Sawara has the story.
The 1935 film Mutiny on the Bounty is about a rebellion by the ship's crew over the captain's management style. In a tweet Tuesday, President Donald Trump said it was one of his favorite movies, commenting, especially when the mutineers need so much from the captain. Trump presumably was referring to a group of Democratic governors who are banding together to collectively decide when they want to reopen their states.
The president is clearly spoiling for a fight on this issue. The worst thing we can do in all of this is start with political division.
New York's Andrew Cuomo and other governors are working together to develop a strategy for gradually easing stay-at-home restrictions in their states. President Trump says that decision is not entirely up to them. Responding to VOA's question on Monday, Trump declared that he has total authority on the issue.
I'm going to put it very simply. The president of the United States has the authority to do what the president has the authority to do, which is very powerful. The president of the United States calls the shots.
Trump's statement started a firestorm on state versus federal authority in a national emergency.
On its face, what President Trump said is simply wrong. There is no sort of plenary authority in the president, even in times of emergency, to have total authority to do whatever he wants.
Yes. Governors have pushed back, including Michigan's Gretchen Whitmer.
There's nobody who would rather be able to push a button and just return to life as normal. But no button exists in this environment.
During the pandemic, the federal government has helped ensure states have the supplies and resources to take care of their citizens. Lawmakers have also passed a $2 trillion plan to support the economy. But governors and mayors have the authority over local matters of public health and safety, including keeping people in their homes and closing businesses.
The president has every incentive to want to improve the economy. He has a lot of financial wherewithal at his disposal to do so. It puts him in a very different position than the governors and the mayors, who are the frontline defense in terms of keeping people at home to protect public safety, but in ways that really do keep the economy limited.
Despite disagreements over who can order the nation's slow return to normalcy, ultimately the virus will determine its own timeline, said Trump's top health expert, Dr. Anthony Fauci.
I think how you reopen, if you want to use that word, the economy in those communities is going to depend a lot on the ability to contain what we know will happen. I'll guarantee you, once you start pulling back, there will be infections. It's how you deal with the infection that's going to count.
Trump has considered opening up parts of the country as early as May 1st. Dr. Fauci says that may be overly optimistic. Patsy Widakuswara, BOA News.
Happening now in Asia, North Korea has marked the anniversary of the birth of its founder, Kim Il-sung, in subdued fashion, with mask-wearing citizens placing flowers before his statue in Pyongyang. You can stay up to date with VOA and VOA 60 online. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. We hope you're doing well. Having already rapidly slowed the spread of the coronavirus, South Korea has now held one of the world's first major elections during the pandemic. VOA's Bo Gallo in Seoul shows how South Korea protected voters while preserving democracy during a time of social distancing.
Outside this polling station in Seoul, mandatory temperature checks. The next stop, free hand sanitizer and plastic gloves. Inside, voters are kept a meter apart with specially marked lines on the floor. Just a few of the ways South Korea is ensuring voters don't spread the coronavirus.
Some countries around the world have postponed their vote, but not in South Korea. That never really seemed like an option here. And turnout today here in Seoul seems strong.
Seoul has been safe, and I feel safe here too.
I was a bit worried about the infection, but polling stations are well disinfected. They gave out gloves and kept distance between people. I didn't worry very much about being infected here.
This election was able to happen in large part because South Korea has so far contained the virus. The number of new infections here has plummeted to around 30 per day. The success has led to soaring approval ratings for President Moon Jae-in. not everything is perfect. Many overseas South Koreans were unable to vote due to lockdowns in other countries.
The election campaign may not be very ideal. I admit that. But they are the same conditions for everyone.
Campaigning in this election also looked different. Instead of big rallies, this candidate campaigned by cleaning public services in his neighborhood.
My party wants us to campaign without physical contact. So here I am, cleaning the streets and disinfecting public surfaces. These are my main campaign activities now.
By early evening, South Korea reported the highest voter turnout in almost two decades. An example for other countries who will try to preserve democracy and public health in the coming months. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. Taiwan is stepping up its aid and is in the process of donating 16 million face masks, mostly to Europe, the United States, Southeast Asia, and Taiwan's diplomatic allies. You'll find all the big stories throughout the day on VOA 60, VOA Asia Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, women in Afghanistan are thriving in many fields and are actively serving their communities. But a number of female journalists in the northern Afghanistan city of Mazar-e-Sharif are still facing gender discrimination. VOA's Mirwais Bejan has more in this story, narrated by Bejan Hamdard.
According to the Afghanistan-based Nine Media Institute, about 40 female journalists in Mazar-e-Sharif have resigned from their news organizations in the past year.
Last year, we had over 100 female journalists in bulk. However, that number has reduced this year.
Those still working say personal security and gender inequality are two huge reasons some women say they are considering leaving their jobs.
As you can see, security in northern Afghanistan has deteriorated recently, and that is why many female journalists are leaving this profession.
Well, one of the main reasons that leads female journalists to leave this profession is the deterioration of security in this region. Moreover, they are not treated appropriately in their workplaces.
Others say while women's rights in Afghanistan have improved, family perspectives and societal pressures are still present.
Compared to male journalists, women's abilities are not taken into account. Women are objectified and are more used as an image.
Families do not allow their daughters to enter this profession. The reason behind this issue is that society in general has a negative view about media environment. Therefore, they think newsrooms are not appropriate places for women to work in.
With a U.S. and Taliban peace deal signed and the intra-Afghan dialogues next, millions of women in Afghanistan, including journalists, hope their working conditions and standing in society improve. For Mirwais Bejan in Mazar-e-Sharif, Afghanistan, Bejan Hamdard, VOA News.
In his first interview since being released from prison, Australia's Cardinal George Pell has said his hardline conservative views on social issues were the reason why he was prosecuted. Pell's conviction for child abuse were unanimously quashed by Australia's High Court earlier this month. Cardinal Pell was the world's most senior Catholic official to be jailed for child abuse. He served more than a year of a six-year prison sentence after being found guilty of sexually assaulting two choir boys in a cathedral in the city of Melbourne in the 1990s. He had always protested his innocence, and this month was acquitted by Australia's High Court. It found there was a reasonable doubt that Pell had the time or opportunity to commit the alleged crimes after a busy Sunday Mass almost 25 years ago. The former Vatican treasurer said he was a casualty of a so-called culture war with opponents who disliked his conservative views on same-sex marriage and abortion. It is now being reported that Cardinal Pell faces fresh allegations from a new accuser. The 78-year-old Pell has told Australian television he would not be entirely surprised if police came after him again. COVID-19 has forced many small business owners to put their American dream on hold. While countless brick-and-mortar stores have closed their doors during the pandemic, some owners are finding new outlets for their entrepreneurial spirit. That's very true in St. Louis, Missouri, where we hear more from Jordan Wyatt.
Emily Struckoff owns The Hair Lab, a salon in St. Louis. With COVID-19 cases spiking across the region and no way to protect her employees and clients from the virus, Emily made the tough decision to close The Hair Lab in mid-March.
I just couldn't bring myself to expose my staff over and over and over because we see so many people in a day. That's a lot of exposure for a service that is so non-essential. So it was a pretty big punch to the gut. Lots of scrambling and trying to figure out like what to do, but at the same time, there's really nothing we can do.
As a single mother with two high school age sons who were diving into online learning, Emily found she suddenly had a lot of free time on her hands. She had an idea.
The first week that we were closed, I did not know what to do with myself. Doing a Shopify store, like a print on demand, like things like that, is actually something that I had looked into years ago. It was always something that I would kind of get started or read about, watch some videos on how to do it. And then in trying to do like full-time job and be a mom and everything else, it would always fall to the wayside. And I'm like, someday I'll tinker with that.
This time, Emily did more than tinker, launching a quarantine-themed apparel business.
I didn't even think too long about it. It's like my quarantine dreams coming true. So yeah, the website is my quarantine dreams. So it was kind of fun, like setting it up. It was a little bit easier than I had expected. And I was able to design a few of the items without having to handle any of the inventory. I can order samples just so I can see what the quality is like and things like that, which I have.
Business has been taking off. Customers can order hats with "Ew, COVID" or quarantine hair printed on them. A baby onesie reads, "Conceived in quarantine."
Most of these sales that are coming in are friends and family and people that are just like, this is really cool that you're doing this. We want to support you. It was their way of being able to show support. So that was pretty cool. I'm starting to see orders come in from people that I don't know. Obviously, I don't think that this will be a long-term thing because I hope we're not in quarantine long-term. But it was a fun project to kind of take my mind off of things.
Jordan Wyatt for VOA News, St. Louis, Missouri.
Are my pets safe from coronavirus? There's no current evidence that cats and dogs can be infected. Hand washing after contact with all animals is recommended. This protects against other bacteria such as E. coli and Salmonella that can pass between animals and humans. For more information, visit the websites at the World Health Organization and the U.S. Centers for Disease and Control. A message from your friends at VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, businesses around the world are struggling to survive amid the lockdown restrictions imposed in many countries to prevent the further spread of the coronavirus pandemic. In Malaysia, a popular hamburger chain is among those coping with the shutdown order for restaurants to close in the evening, a measure that is severely cutting the chain's earnings. We hear more from Dave Grunebaum in Kuala Lumpur.
They really know how to cook at my burger lab in Kuala Lumpur. From this cheddar cheese stuffed and beef bacon wrap burger called the Juicy Lucy, to these patties with onions and mustard. Co-founder Chin Ren Yi opened the first eatery 8 years ago. Now there are 6 branches popular with local Malaysians. But behind all the sizzle, there's concern this business could soon fizzle.
We have people who still want to eat our food. We have a team that is still fighting every other day, trying to make sure that the burgers are cooked well, that the burgers are delivered properly to our customers. So we still have that ongoing. Financially, it's a different story.
Malaysia's nationwide restrictions because of the coronavirus require all restaurants to close by 8 p.m. Once full tables are now empty because customers are not allowed to eat inside. There is takeout and delivery, but it's not enough to make up for the loss of Eden diners.
We have a minimum requirement of sales that we have to hit per day to hit to get break even. We are right now 20 to 30% below break even mark.
This comes after senior managers took pay cuts ranging from 10 to 25%. And half of Chin's part-time hourly employees, mostly university students, stop coming to work because of coronavirus fears. To keep his eateries open, Chin's back office staff divides their time between working from home and in the kitchens.
We have our finance people, our operational guys, even our HR people working on the ground, either doing cashiering, doing griddle one, which is flipping burgers, or assembling burgers.
Miss Edda, I repeat your order again. You ordered one juicy Lucy with awesome fries and one soda.
Finance manager Cassandra Poon still counts the money. But instead of only sitting at her desk, she also works behind the register.
So I would say compared to working in an office and working at a store, office will be like mentally stress you out, but in the store it's physically stressing you out.
The government stimulus program will pay part of the salaries for some of the full-time staff. Plus, the company took out a low-interest loan. Despite this, Chin says his burger joints might go belly up if there is no change.
So if everything stays status quo right now, we probably can survive till late May or early June.
Trying times for so many, but this team insists they'll do their best to try to keep this business afloat. Dave Grunebaum for VOA News, Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia.
In times of crisis, it is usually the most vulnerable members of the community who are the most affected, the poor, the sick, the elderly. In these situations, it's often the efforts of caring individuals and civic-minded businesses that can make a difference. Combine the two, and you get the kind of results that the D.C. Dream Center has always strived for. VOA's Julie Tabo has more.
On this normally quiet street corner in southeast Washington, cars are pulling up with deliveries of donated food. It's all destined for the D.C. Dream Center, a faith-based community center that's about to distribute the free supplies to the neediest members of its community. The line started forming hours before opening.
I'm not working anymore, so I come over here to get the food.
I struggle a lot as far as, you know, with food because I'm a single mom of five, and the resources I have are very low, so this place is very beneficial for me and my family.
You will let us know what it is you want, and we'll make your bag, and we'll give it to you.
Ernest Clover, executive director of the center, says the facility has been repurposed since the arrival of COVID-19.
When we realized that the city was going to close its schools, on March the 16th, we started opening up our Dream Kitchen, where we were making 100 meals a day. Now we're up to over 200 meals a day.
The center also provides donated hygiene products and non-perishable food items.
So pasta, chicken fingers.
But fresh and frozen foods is their main focus. Many of the donations have been coming from area businesses, such as hotels. Patrick Albritton is assistant general manager at the Holiday Inn in Roslyn, Virginia.
2 weeks ago, I said, hey, you know, we're closing down. We have a bunch of food. You know, can it be of use? We were able to provide tons of food for the D.C. Dream Center, and really what Ernest and all the volunteers are doing here is amazing.
Those donated items were distributed directly to the community.
We prep every day, like, for the next day.
And used by a team of dedicated volunteers at their kitchen up the hill who create hundreds of meals 7 days a week. Donations also come from World Central Kitchen, an area nonprofit devoted to providing meals in times of crisis.
Thank you.
So without these donations, there would be a lot of people who wouldn't be eating. There would be a lot of people without hygiene items. There would be a lot of people who wouldn't have the needs to be able to sustain life.
We love the Dream Center. We're glad it's in Ward 7. And we thank y'all for it.
The center has distributed about 5,000 meals since it started its program in March, making a difference in their community, one soul at a time. Julie Tabo, VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter, all at the name VOA Asia. You can also find us on our website at voanews.com. We thank you for spending part of your day with us. And we thank our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, and Keith Lane. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead. Be safe. Be well.